Welcome to Life and Sirens, Behind and On the Scene, a podcast by first responders. We're your hosts, Sophie,
Jamie,
and Aubrey.
The content provided in this podcast is for informational and educational purposes only and should not be considered medical advice. The views and opinions expressed by the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the official policies or positions of any medical institutions, emergency medical services, or healthcare organizations. Patient privacy is a top priority, and all discussions involving real-world emergency situations are de-identified and altered to ensure confidentiality. Always consult with a qualified healthcare professional or your local EMS protocols before making any decisions regarding patient care or medical practices. Listener discretion is advised, as some topics may include discussions of real-world emergency situations. Welcome back to Life and Sirens. Today we're putting Soph in the hot seat because she's officially on flight status. She completed her basic training and we want to dig into what that process was like, the challenges she faced, and the steep learning curve that comes with stepping into flight medicine.
We know a lot of paramedics think about going into flight, but making that transition isn't easy. So today we're going to break it down, what it really takes to get started, and what Sophie has learned so far.
Dun dun dun.
Bam, bam, bam. All right, so we're going to start with the transition into flight. What did you expect going into your training, and how did it really compare?
Well, I was lucky to do a fellowship with my company before I started, which it was now over a year ago when I did this. And I didn't really have any huge expectations because I was really shy and just kind of hung back during that time and did a lot of the online training, which was way harder doing the online training than now. So I was kind of nervous that I was just gonna know literally zero things, which I do feel like a lot of the time that I know zero things. I think the hardest part so far has just been like trying to keep up with all the moving parts, because we have to go out of state for training multiple times in the first couple weeks, and that has been really hard because I've had to drive everywhere, including to my base, which my base is a significant distance from my home. So it's just been a lot of driving and a lot of trying to keep things in order in my brain, if that answers your question.
It absolutely does. For sure. Were there any misconceptions that you had before starting?
I thought it would be easier.
I get it. Yeah, I get that.
Not that I just was like, oh, this is going to be a piece of cake, a walk in the park. I did not necessarily think that. I just am like a clinical nerd, and I do know what I know, but I don't know what I don't know kind of situation. I think that clinically I'll be pretty okay, and I am grateful that I did have the foundation of doing critical care ground transport. I think that is almost like you have to do that. I don't think you should skip out on that. It's not like a requirement for the position, but I do think that's almost like you have to do that, or else it's going to be way more overwhelming. I didn't realize how little I knew about aircrafts.
Right. Do you feel like with the critical care ground, do you think that that aspect is going to be similar, but it's like the actual transitioning it to the flight situation is the hard part?
Yeah. I mean, even so, down to the equipment, like the stuff is the same as far as like, I have the same monitor, I have the same pumps, I have the same like ventilator, like all that stuff. The meds are almost identical. We do have blood and air, but I don't have that on the ground. So that's, I think that the clinical transition is almost identical if you've worked for a service like I do for critical care ground. In fact, some of the things that I have done on the ground are even more expansive than some of the things you might find at my company's air transport. So, like, I've been lucky to have the experience with, like, which we do balloon pumps, Impella, ECMO. I've gotten to do the really scary, stressful, complex patient. I think everything gets a little bit more stressful when you're also learning how to be like a crew member on an aircraft and do the critical care. But I do think that like if you do ground critical care transport in a facility, like you will be fine clinically.
I like that. That's encouraging, especially because if you have two learning curves, that's way harder than have one learning curve.
And that's what I've talked about with some of the nurses I was in new employee orientation with. they've done critical care in the hospital setting, but they have no experience in the field, and they explain how overwhelming that is, and I can only imagine.
Yeah, that's a whole different world.
You're learning to be an EMT and a flight nurse all at once, and a paramedic and a crew member, and that's a lot.
Being outside.
So, yes, kudos to them. Yeah, being outside in the weather, like, that is, you go, girl. You go, dude. Like, that's way harder, I think. So. Yeah.
What do you think has been the hardest part of basic training for you?
Sounds like I'm in the military.
Basic training.
Basic training.
Basic flight
But
school.
Yes, I get what we're talking about, like the basics of flight. I just think being pulled every other direction. Because there are things, because I work for a large company that's nationwide, so some of our training has to be done out of state, and that's a lot for me. And then just, like, generally, like, I don't feel like I belong. I feel very, like, out of place. I'm like, I don't belong here kind of thing. Like, I'm very much a guest still. Like, yes, this is the company that I work for and pays me, but, like, I do not feel like I fit in at all right now. And I think that it's mostly just because, like, I'm timid and scared, like, because this is not my wheelhouse, and I don't want people to think that I'm, like, coming in all headstrong, because I have so much to learn, so I'm just, like, trying to, like, lean back a little bit, so I'm maybe doing that to myself, but, yeah, I feel like I am a giraffe in a lemur exhibit.
Oh. I was like, what is going on?
Yeah, it doesn't make sense. Nick. Everyone's like, what is going on there? You know what? That's how I feel.
I feel like that is such a natural transition in EMS, like, to any, whether it's, like, a licensure transition or going from 911 ground to critical care ground, or ground to flight. Like, you, when you start something brand new, you just automatically feel like you're out of place.
Yes.
And I think that is a normal feeling in transition, and you don't know anybody, and you haven't had time to bond, because we come from a place where we are so deeply bonded with the people we work with, that then when you move into somewhere new,
I feel like a stranger.
Yeah, you're like, I don't know them, they don't know me. And I think that is a natural transition when you move into a new.
Yeah, I think everyone's very kind. I think the hardest part is just, I am so enthusiastic and eager to learn. I don't want people to be annoyed. I'm like, I want to learn all the things. I'm super type A. I want to learn as much as I can so I can do the best I can. And I don't want to be like that needy new hire. I want to be proficient, and I am proficient in some things, but, like, obviously this is a whole new company, and the things that I have learned on the ground may be a little shifted. I don't want to be that over eager new hire, but, like, and that's fine in most cultures, but I haven't gotten a good read on the culture that I'm about to be, like, immersed in.
Yeah,
I think that it seems great, but I don't know them. They might be like, get this girl out of here, all she wants to talk about is Levofed. You know what I mean?
Levo.
He said, can we please discuss our pressures again?
Yeah.
Going along with that, have you found yourself needing to relearn anything specific, like in a new way? Because you said there's, like, some correlation, but obviously it's in a new realm.
I've worked at the same ground 911 for my whole entire EMS career. I mean, I've worked other places, but full time, this is where I've been. And I think just, like, equipment differences, that's really the biggest difference, is, like, equipment is, like, the type of equipment that we use. Like, our, like, for needle decompression, it's a lot different there. Like, the equipment they use is far more sophisticated than what we use on the ground. Some of it is not. Some of it is less sophisticated. It just depends on your service. But I also think that it's very weird, and I became grossly aware of this when I went to sim lab, was that I have no access to the patient below their waist.
Ooh, that is really strange.
I can't just swing from the bar of the ambulance over the patient.
More foot IVs.
No more. Well, I mean, you gotta do it on the ground.
On the ground, yeah.
And
that's like, thinking like that has been an adjustment. Obviously, I haven't really done patient flights yet, but just, I can't just be like, I have so much room in the ambulance, especially being 5'2" and as small as I am. Like, I can go wherever the heck
Absolutely.
I want to.
You can't circle the patient like a little shark.
No, I can literally sit on the floor next to the patient in the ambulance. Here, I'm just like...
Right, so if you find yourself in a situation where, like, you... Okay, say it is, like, a gunshot wound, tourniquet's in place, they have, like, a femoral bleed. And in the aircraft, that tourniquet stops functioning and we start bleeding around it. What do you do?
Like, you just, how can you tell that's happening?
Well, no, you just can't reach them. So, like, do you...
You can. It's just like, sorry, I hope they're unconscious.
Yeah.
Honestly, like, it's just very... You have to get, just like on ground, you have to get pretty creative how to access your patient. The aircraft I'm in is the Bell 407, so it's pretty slim down there. But you can. You just have to maybe get a little uncomfy. It's not ideal. You want to try to...
Try to mitigate that best you can.
Have they considered making a combat gauze Nerf gun?
I didn't know what you were about to say. Honestly, what fun that would be.
I mean, tell them I can 3D print it.
Oh, yeah. Do you think that kind of in the vein of like your patient access and patient care, are you thinking about like patient airway management and sedation differently now than you do on ground?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. That's been weird to me because like... For critical care transport on ground, most like we don't go in and be like, we're intubating your patient, this is what's happening, blah, blah, blah. That's not typically something that happens for the company that I work for on the ground. But that is definitely something we think of even when we're transferring from hospital. Just because, like, if I'm in the ground, on the ground with the patient, I could easily, maybe not ideally, but easily intubate them en route, right? It's a lot harder to do those things when it's difficult to hear. It's like you don't have as much space or hands in the aircraft, clearly.
Yeah, I feel like your general patient positioning is just like trash.
Yeah, it's not fun.
Yeah.
Like for me yet, I don't know. I haven't like honed in that clearly.
Right. I just, in my brain, like their head is just like in your lap. And I'm like, that's just a horrible angle.
The other aircraft on our base, that is quite literally how it is.
Yeah.
And they sit facing aft, like they're facing backwards.
Oh
yeah. And the patient is quite literally
right there.
Their head is in between your legs. Like, it is just wild. Like, and that's not ideal to intubate. Like,
no,
especially with the ways that we've been used to intubating. Not that we have like copious amounts of space in the ambulance, it's just like, it just, you have to learn a whole different like groove, I guess.
For
like
sure.
System,
I think you have to. And your equipment, like, because we carry video, but we don't carry video that makes it, we carry the air track, and so it's just large.
Yeah,
is really it. But like, I guess if you have a McGrath or something, that might make a strange position a little bit easier to access, but man, it's still just not ideal.
Yeah. And the whole idea of like taking a patient airway for like crew and patient safety,
that's wild to me.
That is wild to me, too. Like, that is absolutely, by no means would you
right.
do that.
Because if we have to, like, sedate a patient for crew and patient safety, it is that. It's a sedation.
Yeah.
We will use ketamine or Versed, and it's a behavioral sedation. But if we are aside somebody on the ground because they were just being wild.
Yeah.
But it is so, it is, like, a life threat in the aircraft.
The last thing you need is your patient kicking out the windows of the aircraft.
Absolutely. And that's a hard transition for my brain to think about.
Yeah. You have to consider all of these things. Mm-hmm. And that's something we even talked about at our regional intensive training, was that, like, here's this scenario. This is wild. Your patient's calm now. What do you do? Like, and really, it's just, that is for sure provider judgment. Like, it's a big deal to me to take an airway. I think it's a big deal for most anyone, even air or ground. But, like, to do it for that is not something I'm comfortable with yet.
Yeah, I think that's going to be a huge learning curve. To be like, this actually is the safest.
Yeah.
Because in our brain, that's not how we think about it.
Safest is just them maintaining their own airway.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, but that actually is the safest. I want to ask you about some of the things that you had to learn being on the flight crew that have nothing to do with medicine.
I think that often we're managing a lot of other responders on scene, but we're not really worried about if, like, one misstep is going to, like, chop their head off. And that you have to do sometimes. And, like, people just come... I've experienced this even as a ground crew working with the aircrafts. And no offense to, like, a volunteer firefighter or whatever. Like, I'm just going to use this as an example because you guys, especially in small communities, aren't doing this every day. Hopefully not. That would be a lot of helicopters. But they aren't as familiar, or maybe like they haven't gotten the tail watch classes and things like that that equip you to be around aircrafts. Even like myself, like you know how many times I've been around these aircraft so far? Like, it's been every single day. I've been in them. I did it in my fellowship. I was in them, but like, I've transported patients to them, but like, it is just uncomfortable for me. I don't feel really comfortable, and like, I don't want to say safe, because I feel safe because I know the rules, but like, I don't know. I just don't want to get in the wrong spot, whatever. I know that these crews are also thinking this, like, on the ground. They don't want to walk into the wrong spot. And I know we tell you guys a lot of rules. I think that is something that is significant. Is like, A, you have to watch for other responders, family members. I haven't experienced this yet, but apparently horses will just, like, run straight at the aircraft if you're landing in a field. I didn't know that. So make sure there's no animals in the field that you're landing.
What is it? Noted. I think you told me that the other day, like, cows run away, but horses will run directly
towards
you.
That's what
I've
been told. Obviously, I am just a wee baby in this field. But, like, yes, that is what I've been told. Definitely don't want that to happen.
Yeah, I feel like that is stressful. That would be stressful for you guys, because it's stressful for us on the ground.
Yeah.
Because, like, when we land an aircraft, mm-hmm. I freeze. I will not move until they will look at me and be like, you here. Until I have direction, I will not even take a step towards that aircraft.
Well, they'll tell you. Yeah, that's fine. Like, that's ideal. I think that we are very hyper aware of our surroundings in EMS, like field ground EMS. But you have to be so, like, hyper aware, like in the air, on the ground, takeoff, landing, all these things. Like, I think that's one of the many reasons people say, like, flight is exhausting, because you just have to be so alert all the time. And I, like, think about this, too. Like, you've run all shift. You drive, you know, to the trauma center with your patient. It's, like, 5 a.m. You can just take snooze. That's just really not the reality of, like, flight. And obviously your pilot can't. So you're just all just chilling.
Yeah, I also never thought about that aspect. Mm-hmm. That you have to be so alert going to and from whatever scene you've been on, that you don't have, like, you're going to a scene and coming from a scene is not downtime for you.
Right. And that's one thing, like, obviously you can be doing your chart and, like, doing things at landing and takeoff, obviously most critical phases, but, like, it is just that aspect too, like, and I think that I know in my brain that's going to be exhausting for me. And people are like, oh, most of these flights are going to be, like, very chill interfacility transfers. I'm like, I'm so aware of that. Perfect. But the thing that I'm also aware of is that I'm having to learn how to be a helicopter crew member and also be a flight medic. So, like, I'm not just sitting there thinking, oh, whatever. Like, my patients, too. I'm watching the drips. They're pretty stable, whatever. But I'm also having to think of these other things all at the same time. And I know that's going to be exhausting. And everyone's like, you're going to be fine. You're going to be fine. You're going to be fine. I am going to be fine eventually, but I am stressed right now. And that's fine. That's fine. It's important to me to do well, but...
And I think that having some stress in this moment is also, like, responsible.
Yeah.
I think people that leave ground and go to flight and they are, like, arrogant and they think, I'm just going to kill it and I already know all this, and they have very much a chip on their shoulder when they go into flight, I think they're dangerous.
Yeah.
And so to
any
be
field,
right. So to be a little bit stressed and like, hey guys, can you please tell me what we're doing?
Yeah.
I think that's actually a great approach, because stressed and wanting to do well and being nervous about something that you're not familiar with is not the same as being competent.
Yeah.
Like, it's different. And so you can be highly competent and still stressed about it.
Yeah.
Until you get more comfortable. And I think that initially that's actually a good place to be, because it keeps you pretty vigilant on the things that you're supposed to be doing.
100%. I think that anytime we do something new, it's going to be a little stressful. I'm okay. I don't want people to be like, I was talking to someone on base today and they were like, I'll talk you off the ledge. Like, it's fine. I'm like, I don't need to be talked off the ledge. I need a certain kind of anxiety and stress to surround what I'm doing to make sure I'm doing it proficiently and efficiently. I know that seems dumb, but I have to be a little stressed, because that's just, I'm type A. I like to know what I like to know. Like, I want to make sure I'm on top of this. I don't want to disappoint myself. I don't want to disappoint the people who hired me. Like, it just means a lot to me.
I'm the same way. I need a bit of a driving force. Mm-hmm. And that comes in different shapes, but a lot of times it's stress.
Yeah.
And that keeps me
neurotic.
Aren't we all?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, so let's transition just a little bit. This is something that we were just chit-chatting about earlier. And I know this is a very sought-after question. How much autonomy do you have as a flight medic compared to a ground medic?
None. I'm just kidding. I feel like for most services, it's comparable. Like, you still have protocols. You still have, like, standard operating guidelines. I think that there's a closer relationship, based on my understanding right now, with your medical direction. So I think that your medical directors get to know you. They're way more involved than they are at many ground services. They do a lot of QA, a ton of QA. They are so involved. So I think that, yes, we have protocols we still have to operate by, and they're pretty firm. I do think that you develop a more close personal relationship with your medical directors in this setting, so that they're willing to, like, place more stake into you, I suppose. That, I don't know a better way to, like, I know that sounds kind of weird, but I think they're willing to trust you a little more and let you go a little bit farther as long as you're running things by them. So I do think there's something pretty special there that we don't necessarily, and some ground services may be this way.
And I think this is true for a lot of ground services. You have a medical director, and then your actual medical direction is whatever hospital
right.
is
They're
near
just whoever.
You. And so you call the hospital and talk to an attending, and that's your medical direction. And so your medical director is like whose license you operate under and who does your protocols. But I think it's really cool that on paper it may seem like stricter protocols, so like less autonomy, but then actually that transitions into more because yeah. you have that relationship with your medical director, so they're willing to like let you push the boundary a little bit and do absolutely what's best for your patient because of that relationship.
Absolutely.
And that's really cool. I think ground services sometimes our protocols are a bit more open, which I love because then we can use our brains and we can think through things. And I enjoy that, but it's because there's not that relationship often.
Yeah, and you might be calling a different doctor who may feel a different way and mm-hmm. want a different dose. And, you know, it's just every doctor has their own personality that in medicine, obviously they're humans, but like in medicine, like how they practice medicine. They're all have different ways. So I think that on the ground it is necessary to have a wider push. But I mean, we can, just like ground, we can get sending facility, receiving facility, whatever medical direction, but our medical director is very involved in making sure we're providing the best care and holding us accountable.
That's really cool.
I'm really looking forward to that.
Yeah.
Everyone's
yeah.
like, it's so scary. I'm like, yeah, it is scary, but like, just do your job.
Right. But that could also be cool.
Yeah. And you know, it's not, what's actually scarier is medical directors that don't care.
Yeah.
So I know it's going to be a lot. My brain hurts.
How do run tickets compare in flight run tickets to ground
EMS?
What do y'all use?
Image Trend. But you almost have to because it has like freaking input labs and ABGs. And
yeah.
X-rays.
We went to EMS World and interacted with Image Trend. And it's so different that my brain had a hard time. I've used ZSO from day one, like out the gate. And so to me, that is what run tickets are.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's really hard to transition to a different software.
Every service I've used.
Yeah.
Every service I've worked for has used mm-hmm. ESO.
But the people I've talked to that have it, like I think Nashville uses Image Trend. Mm-hmm. A lot of them are like pretty cool with it.
You want to know what's crazy? So when you're like doing Image Trend, it has like, you know how on ESO you can put, like click the check and it will tell you things that you have to have to close your run ticket? Okay, so it starts at the beginning. Like, but it's not a check mark. It's just a number. And it says minus whatever the number is what you're missing. And I was doing a practice one, and it said negative 546.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Oh, no. That is a daunting number.
Which maybe that's what ours would be if you just didn't fill it out. But, like,
yeah,
maybe.
Maybe.
I've never counted.
Yeah. There's still a CAD and everything, so you don't have to put that in.
That's nice. Good.
It does make me kind of happy though that it seems like it's thorough.
Oh yeah, yeah, it for sure is. It's just the only part that I prefer ESO over versus Image Trend has nothing to do with the service. This is just specifically the programs. Image Trend is very redundant. Mm. So you're having to double, triple, quadruple chart things, and you have to. It's not the company that you work for. It's Image Trend. Sorry.
Oh, yeah. I don't love that.
Yeah. So that makes me a little nervous. You just have to be, like, really focused.
Yeah, you have to check, and double check.
Mm-hmm. So, I think it'll be fine. It's just going to be, it will be a steep learning curve.
Yeah, especially because you'll, working for two different services with two different, like, softwares is mm-hmm. going to be, like, to jump back and forth. Yeah. For sure. So to wrap us up, if you could go back just to the beginning of your flight journey, so day one, what would you tell yourself now, just like these, like this month or so in?
What's day one? Interview?
Yeah.
I don't know. I think I still feel the same. I just feel really lost right now. I know that I have a brain in my head and I have, you know, enough experience and intellect to fall back on. But I just need to, like, remind myself, like, just do your best. Just do your freaking best. That's okay. Don't worry about letting people down. If you're doing your best, if they're let down, then that's their let down. Like, I think that can go for any part of your life. But, yeah.
For sure. I think that you also should remind yourself that 1 month in, you should not be proficient.
Right.
Like, you should not be at the top of your game. And we're all really bad at that because we're type A. Like, we hate not being the best at things. And so give yourself a little bit of grace there. Like, there's a steep learning curve and you shouldn't be proficient right now because you haven't done it yet. You know? And so, like, that's a normal way to feel.
Yeah.
And if you don't feel that way, again, like, that's dangerous.
I think and this is going to sound like I just think I'm awesome, but I think I just got really good at having my groove and doing my thing on the ground. And I feel like I got really good at it. And now I'm just, like, not good at it. Which I haven't even flown, okay? Like, I've just been doing the ground training.
Oh, my gosh,
and stuff
you might
like that.
Step out of the aircraft on your first call and just be like, wah, pow, 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 pow.
I hope it sounds like that.
I hope
honestly.
So, too.
I could.
Just put headphones in. Have those background noises going.
Yeah. I think as long as I have a supportive preceptor, I think that's really important. And I think that I'd like to think once you get to this point in this level and this caliber of medical care pre-hospitally that, like, we're all adults here and we're going to be kind and, you know, effective communicators.
For sure. That it'll be more of like a, hey, we're happy to have you. Like, let's learn some things mm-hmm. instead of like,
new girl.
Are you going to make it? Wait.
Yeah. Yeah. Everyone's been very kind and there's some people that I already knew coming in. It is overwhelming, though. I'm like, I'm just Sophie. Just me.
I like that, Soph.
Just me.
Well, guys, that is going to wrap up today's episode of Life and Sirens. If you have any more questions about flight medicine transitioning, send them our way. And also follow Soph's journey. She's, like, right at the beginning of it, which is a super exciting time to learn and to grow and really figure out the nuances. And in a year from now, we'll be doing an episode that is like, okay, how weird is it now that you are proficient and you feel so much better about it?
I hope I get there. I hope I do. I've been partnering with FlightBridge ED also. So FlightBridge has been very supportive and the pals over there have really been encouraging and sharing their knowledge about flight medicine. So if you need any other information about becoming a flight medic, that's a good spot to go.
For sure. They have fantastic resources and they put on a lot of really good classes for like your FPC and your critical care and your CCRN and all that.
Yep. They got everything.
This has been Life and Sirens, produced by three nerds trying to bring you content that you might actually care about.